Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. American work weeks are long compared to other rich countries. Much less well known is that Americans are more likely to work at night and to work weekends. Our guest this hour has examined the relationship between these two phenomena using the American Time Use Survey and time diary data from five other countries. Americans, they write, incidents of night and weekend work would drop by about 10% if European work weeks prevailed. Even if no Americans work long hours, the incidence of unusual work times in the U.S. would far exceed those in continental Europe. Our guest this hour is the co-author of the report, Long Work Weeks and Strange Hours, and he is Professor Daniel Hammermisch, Professor of Economics at Royal Holloway University of London. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Why is it that is it just a cultural thing with Americans that we tend to work really hard and we work after 10 o'clock at night and we work on weekends? Or is it something else? Why is it that these other European countries have work more at hand and they do other things? You leave the workplace and you go do something else. You spend time with your family, you read a book, you watch the news, whatever it is you do. What is it that's going on? Is it peculiarly American? Professor Hammermisch, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So we work, I guess it's known that we work longer than European countries, but what's this? We're working after 10 o'clock at night into 6 o'clock in the morning, some of us. We're working weekends. That's unusual.
It is unusual. Let's be one thing clear. We're not working the whole night or the whole weekend.
No.
And
no.
In fact, those folks who are working at those times are not working any more hours at those times than a European who works then. It's just an awful lot more of us are doing it then.
Mm-hmm. And is it all kinds of workers, or are these people who are in high-stress, well-paying jobs?
Quite the contrary. It's people who are low-skilled.
Really?
They're very young. Minorities, immigrants, it's disproportionately people who are low-skilled. That's what's intriguing about it.
That is intriguing. So what kinds of jobs do they have that would have them working after 10 o'clock at night?
Well, you go to the 7-Eleven, as I do down the street from my house, okay? The folks behind the desk are typically foreigners. They have foreign accents in Texas. They are older. They tend to be low-skilled. That's one kind of job. It's sort of low-level service or retail are very common.
Mm-hmm. So these would be people who are doing like a second job, or their hours are just that they have to work at night as part of their regular job?
Those are typically regular jobs, not secondary jobs. And I mean, why do people do it's the question. I guess the answer is we know very well that jobs at work at lousy times do pay more. So if you want more money, which you do much more if you're poor, you're going to take that kind of job in a lousy time. You're going to get money and give up freedom to work at a better time.
Yeah. So what's the story in Europe? Are those places not open at that time of night or what?
They're more open than they used to be. But you go traveling in Europe even now, and it's a lot harder to find things open at nights and on weekends than it is here. I mean, this is it used to be much more different, but it's still substantially different. It's striking. Absolutely striking.
So what's this weird thing about America that we have to have everything open all the time?
That is the $64,000 question. Mm. We like it. Those of us who are well off, high paid people, like the freedom to go out to buy whenever we want. And given the substantial and rising inequality in this country, there's a sufficient supply of people who are willing to work at those times and cater to you and me.
Mm-hmm. What about the average work week? You know, I'm sure, although it wasn't specifically part of the study, do Americans just on average work longer work weeks than Europeans?
Absolutely. Longer work weeks. And what's especially striking is not so much the work week in the particular week when they are working, although that is 3 to 5 hours longer than rich European countries. What's really striking is the amount of vacation time, holiday time, and time off that we don't get compared to Europeans. That's even a bigger issue, which I didn't go into in that paper at all.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a little bit. Are you living in London now?
No, I'm right here in Texas, same time zone as you are.
Oh, you are. But you teach in London?
I teach in London 3 months of the year. Winter, of course, just the time to be in London, not in central Texas.
Yeah, right. So you have a real firsthand observation of what's going on here, too.
Why? I do, indeed.
So where did that tradition come from? I think it's entirely civilized. You know, that Europeans take, a lot of them take August off, and they go to the beach and travel, and we don't even use all our vacation time.
We sure don't, and they typically do, but they have an awful lot more of it, more holidays. I mean, it's not just the average worker. I mean, most of my friends who are academics, who are pretty hard driving in Europe, I mean, the Dutch colleagues I had, I taught there for a while, I mean, they're off. They go to their houses on the beach. The Swedes go to their country houses. It's a tradition here. It's gotten worse, I think. I mean, while other countries' hours of work fell over the last 30 years, ours have stayed remarkably constant, and the vacation time really hasn't gone up either.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about this being low-income people who are working these hours, what about those who are on the top of the scale, too? I guess our impression is that these people are just working like dogs, and they're going home, and they're poring over the books, and doing a lot more work, so they're earning their, some would say that some of the salaries nobody could earn, but they have to work hard to stay at the top of their profession, so they're working extra at home.
I'm not sure that we are working at home more. I didn't include that in this version of the paper, but they are working at home more than Europeans are. That's well known. And that's typically people who are at the higher end of the distribution of skills. So homework is a luxury thing that better off people do. Work at night and weekend, that's sort of a, not a poverty thing, but a lower skilled thing. One of the we are working more, but it's typical people working more are the high-skilled people, the educated people. And the reason I think is that, look, I mean, wages of those people have risen especially. It's more attractive to work more, and so they do it.
Mm-hmm. So what countries did you look at in addition to the U.S.?
See, we looked at France, Germany, U.K., Spain, and the Netherlands, those
mm-hmm.
five.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're all pretty rich countries, not quite as well off as we are, but getting close to it. And, I mean, the U.K. is less different from us than the other four. But even there, in these dimensions, it's still less weekend work, less night work, shorter work weeks by a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And which country is the most strikingly different?
Can you guess?
Spain?
Spain, and even more so in some ways, France.
Oh.
I mean, you just don't work overtime hours, or hardly anybody does. And you don't work nights at all very much, or weekends. So, yeah, I think France is the most different.
Uh-huh. So if there were certain kinds of restrictions that are on some of those European countries, are there that we don't have here that result in our working nights more, or is it just the income inequality issue?
Well, to some extent, some of them, I can't remember which ones, do impose penalties on employers for hours worked at strange times. Some of them have overtime that kicks in before 40 hours. Like France, it's 35 hours. After that, you pay an overtime.
Really?
Time. Oh, yeah.
Woo.
But the thing is, I mean, we looked at shortening hours of work. I mean, we said, what if nobody worked more than 45 hours here? Would that affect working at night and working weekends? And it would, but even that wouldn't lower us to the incidence of night and weekend work that you see in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that a lot of those low-skilled, low-income workers are working more than 45 hours a week?
No, not very many, actually. They aren't working that long. We know shorter hours are characteristic of lower-skilled people in this country, but those short hours tend to be disproportionately nights and weekends.
I see.
It's just the opposite for the work week and when you work between by skill level.
I see. And in France, the 35, am I getting this right? The 35-hour work week is common?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
Well, that Absolutely. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it depends what you want. I've had people, I had an op-ed which talked about some of this, and one of my former students from 40 years ago wrote and said he thinks this has an effect on output. It lowers GDP. And isn't that horrible? And I say, you know, you're right. It does lower GDP. If we don't work as hard, we don't produce as much. But do we really need to have an average income of $52,000 instead of $51,000? Perhaps we've gone a bit high on income and a bit low on leisure.
Mm. Interesting.
But, you know, it's a trade-off. You're not right. going to get something for nothing. The question is, what do you want?
Yeah. And what about the number of people in the workforce? Do you get a lot more of them if you have a 35-hour work week?
That's a very hard question. Everybody thinks, oh, boy, if we cut hours of work, we'll expand the number of jobs and employment. There's a lot of research on that over the last 45 years. Best estimates, including some of my own, say, yeah, we get a few more people working, and we'd also have less output. You take your pick again. make your choices. That's a political question.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that some of that nightly work and some of the, you mentioned the 7-Eleven near your house, I mean, in some parts of some cities, that's not an easy place to be after 10 o'clock at night.
No, it's certainly not. In fact, it really is quite cute. It's an old study I published, golly, 15 years ago, which made it very clear there was less of that nighttime work where the murder rate and the armed robbery rate was higher. So you're exactly right. People understand this, and they respond accordingly.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about long work weeks and strange hours. Our guest has done a report on that, and it looks at what is peculiarly American. We'll talk a little bit more about whether we have a culture in this country that has this to be the case. But you look at a number of different factors: vacation time, the number of hours that we work a week, which is highest among those other industrialized countries, and the fact that there are more people working nights and people who are working weekends. My first thought would be it's the people who are doing really well who are doing that, working extra hard. But the study shows that it's low-skilled workers that are in that situation. Here is our phone number for you to join the conversation. What do you do work at night? A regular job outside the – we're talking about outside the house work, nighttime work, weekend work. What do you think would be the consequences of a 35-hour work week? Would our gross domestic product go way down, or would we all be a lot saner and have a lot more times to be with each other and be good to each other and do some other good in the world? 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter at K Dunn Show. And our guest is Professor Dan Hammermisch. He is a professor of economics at Royal Holloway University of London and published a paper, Long Work Weeks and Strange Hours. Mark in Oconomowoc, our first caller. Hey, Mark.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm just calling because Professor Hammermisch just made a comment that was pretty much highly opposite what I just heard, encountered. I was in France earlier in the year, and I was visiting people that family's known for years. And these two women who are roughly my age talk about, they both start about 9, talk about coming home from work at 8:30 and 9 at night pretty consistently. And while they do have the rule of the 35-hour work week, these people just said to me, you know, I never hear about Americans working late. And now I know that there's contextual things. You know, they don't talk to that many people that might be in that situation. But these people talked about coming home from work at 9 o'clock at night.
Let's remember that I was talking about night work being 10 to 6. So you can be working evening work and working very long hours, and I think that's a lot
you're
of
you're
it.
Talking about what, night work,
work
10 to 6?
Between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Oh, so you were also talking about taking work home, though.
No, I wasn't. You could be working any place, at the workplace or at the office. In fact, in
Pardon
our
me?
Data, it could be either one. But it's work. We've defined night work to be between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. I thought you were talking about people that bring their work home.
No, people that bring their work home unequivocally whenever they do it. That is high-skilled people like your friends in Paris. No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think your anecdotal evidence seems fairly consistent with our data sets.
Sure. I mean, okay,
I don't think they're inconsistent.
I thought you both were talking about people that bring their work home.
Yeah, I may have been bringing us into that area of the conversation, but it's not the study. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all. Correct. I missed that.
All right.
Well,
it's okay, Mark. All right. Thanks for the call. Richard in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I read somewhere that Walmart actually calls their employees in when things are busy. And let them, you know, they don't work when things aren't so busy, that their whole lives are messed up because of the Walmart policy. Is that true?
I've read that same story. I've not seen it. I don't go to Walmart for variety of reasons. There's not one near my house being one of them. I mean, the question is, whose fault is this? In a very real sense, assuming Walmart, like most companies, wants to make money, the reason that the employees are called in crazy times like weekend and night is because people like you and me insist on going shopping at nights and weekends. So in a sense, Walmart's behavior is a response to consumers' preferences for having stuff at hand at all kinds of goofy times.
Mm-hmm. Well, and is that something that we wanted? It's hard to, because when I was growing up, that wasn't the case. Things were closed at night. There weren't these all-night shopping centers, grocery stores, et cetera. We got along fine.
We got along very fine. I mean, I'm 71. I remember those days. And the question is, why do we get to this new situation where we're in this what economists call low-level equilibrium of people working at all kinds of crazy times? The question is, how do you break that nexus between people's demands for stuff at all times and low-skilled immigrant minorities' willingness to work at these crazy times? I mean, where do you intervene to break what I view as a rather detrimental set of outcomes for society?
Well, what's the answer? Where do you?
You know, as the old joke about the horse that tried out for the Chicago White Sox, my team, he tried out, and they pitched him one ball after another, and he hit home run after home run. He finally hit one, a long, screaming line drive, and the manager said, run, run. And the horse, if I could run, I'd be at the racetrack. And that's the same. If I had an answer to this, I wouldn't be sitting in my office.
I used to be a White Sox fan when I was a kid as well. No, not anymore, although they're my second team.
It's behind Milwaukee, I'm sure.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Richard, for your call. We'll take more phone calls momentarily. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're talking with a professor of economics at Royal Holloway University of London, co-author of the working paper Long Work Weeks and Strange Hours. Professor Dan Hammermisch is our guest. More phone calls momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. Val in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Val.
I just had 2 points to make. In 1974, I was in the Canary Islands and got to know a man from Germany, and he just took me to task for how crazy we Americans were. We didn't take many holidays, and we worked like crazy, and he just thought that was crazy. You know, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, and everything was closed at night and on Sundays. Daddy had to gas the car up if we were going to our grandparents' house, you know, on Friday, because there wouldn't be any gas stations open. So we've really kind of intensified through the years, but I don't think we're changed. You know, it's just gotten worse. I'll take my stuff off the air, folks. Have a good day.
Thanks, Al. You too.
Her comment is very interesting. I used to say that there are as many Germans on vacation any day than there are Americans, even though the population of Germany is about one-third or less of ours, about one-fourth almost. That's not quite true anymore, but they have much, much longer vacations. And, you know, somebody might say, well, you know, they don't live as well, but the Germans, in fact, right now are doing remarkably well. They're not quite as wealthy as we are. Income per head is about 85% of ours. But the rate of people with really low incomes is also much lower, and they aren't working as hard. I mean, something has happened here. I don't know what it is, and I don't know how to change it. All I've really done is call attention to a variety of aspects of it.
And what happens? I know that you've looked at what happens to people who work those kinds of hours. Obviously, your social life is suffering, but it also may not be very good for your health.
That's a tough question. And remember, the people who are working long hours tend to be those who are higher income, so they're going to live longer, be healthier anyway. In terms of what the effect of working at these goofy hours is, given the amount you actually work, that I've not seen anything on. I just don't know the answer on that.
Yeah. And when did this all start? Do you know? Can you pinpoint? Was it the 80s or the 90s? Or?
It is certainly in terms of long hours. If you look at the data from the late 70s, we didn't stand out at all. The Japanese worked much more than we did. The English worked more. Australians, I have these data somewhere right in front of my computer here. We were not unusual then. Somehow between the 70s and right now, we've become a real outlier in terms of the length of the work week. As far as working strange hours go, that's much tougher because there just aren't very many good data sets from long ago. We just don't have that. But the work week, I mean, the Canadians used to work as much as we did. They're now shorter. Finland was actually a bit more than us. They're now way shorter, and so on and so forth. UK, all of them. We weren't unusual. Now we are.
Hmm. And so why are they shorter? Was it a national policy? Did they have a discussion about what's important in life or what?
I couldn't imagine such a discussion proceeding. But in a very real sense, these discussions do take place implicitly. I think that's a crucial thing. They're there implicitly in our political systems. To some extent, these countries did change their laws. But I think the impact of the laws is pretty minor. There have been a few studies of that. I think the real issue is that somehow, sort of in an inchoate, implicit way, they decided to, we're going to stop working so much. We're richer now. We don't need the money as much as we need time to enjoy it and to spend it.
Hmm. Bill,
and, I don't know how that's going to happen here. I mean, I don't see that kind of political discussion taking place formally here, that's for sure.
No. Bill in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, I was just calling. I want to commend your guest for the study that he conducted. But I was thrown back a bit by the term that your guest used in terms of intervening to solve this problem. And I think you echo the sentiment when the good old days, stores weren't open as long, et cetera, et cetera. And I commend him for his response as it related to, you know, meeting consumers' demands and the flexibility in everyone's schedules and things. I think that's great. And as far as not wanting to work those 10 to 6 a.m. graveyard shifts and things like that. I mean, education is the key result of trying to get out of that situation if you're not comfortable with it. So, I mean, I think there's some personal responsibility and not necessarily yet another government program that we need to throw at this problem. I think we don't want to be like France. We don't want to be like Spain. We don't want to be like Germany. We want to be Americans, and I think that's what we should strive for.
Thank you, Bill.
I agree with that completely in certain ways. I mean, we do want to have, and we have a tremendously, totally unique background, which makes us different. The question is why, what has changed to make us suddenly so much more different from the rest of the rich countries? I don't think our basic ethos has changed. I see it basically as a tremendous rise in inequality. I mean, in addition to being the long work week champions, we're also the champions in the rising inequality of outcomes league, and this is a point that got a lot of attention this year. I think these two are related, but it's very hard, since these are two general trends in the last 30 years, to pinpoint the exact causation between them.
Thanks, Bill, for your call. Evan in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. I love your program.
Thanks, Evan.
I am a young professional, 23 years old. I'm in sales. So obviously the more that I work in a week, the more money that I make. So I choose to work longer weeks. My girlfriend is a bartender, so kind of getting back to the weird work schedule thing, we do work opposite schedules. I guess my comment, if the professor could give some insight on it, would be that in these other countries, are there people that choose to work longer hours? Why can't, I guess my question would be, it's in my benefit to work longer hours. It's in a lot of these people's best interest to work longer hours. So I don't understand why people don't choose to work longer hours.
Well, let's be careful on that. I mean, choose in the sense, sure, I choose to do things. On the other hand, my wage, if it isn't very high, and the needs that I perceive from myself give me incentives to work more hours to make more. I think the reason we don't see as much of the long work week there is partly legislation they've enacted, partly the fact that the very high-wage people in those countries are not as high-wage compared to the average as they are here. In other words, we're much higher inequality. Mm-hmm. And finally, there's individual culture and preferences. I think in those countries, the culture is you spend time with your family, you take more leisure. That's a cultural thing. And that is very hard to change. The question is why it seems to have changed here.
Yeah. Thank you, Evan. It may be that we've just become so used to working that we just don't know what else to do, huh?
I certainly, in my own case, and let me say by straight out on this, I am one of the worst offenders. I'm a 71-year-old workaholic.
Oh.
I stop me before I work again.
What's wrong with you?
I've been doing this. I've been teaching economics for 46 years.
Oh,
and
my
I like
goodness.
Economics. And other than playing the piano a little bit and reading and running, I don't have many other hobbies.
Yeah.
My wife is driven nuts by this.
I would imagine. But then again, you're obviously enjoying what you're doing, too, which is
okay. I agree. And I think a lot of high-wage people do enjoy it. On the other hand, the enjoyment that high-skilled people get from their work and the tremendous returns they get, given the high wages they get per hour worked, does affect other people. My workaholism affects my wife's happiness.
Mm.
And if I were an attorney working long hours, it would affect the happiness of my coworkers, who I insist on working long hours with me, my secretary, my executive assistant, my junior partners, etc.
Right.
So this kind of preference does help me being the typical high-wage people, if I were such, but it spills over and makes other people's lives
yeah.
less attractive than it might have been.
Well, I'm sorry if I'm getting too personal, but you did bring up your wife, so I will have to ask, is she working?
No, she's retired. I'm one-third retired now. She's been fully retired for a year.
And what does she want to travel more, or what?
Well, but we spend 3 months of a year in London.
Right.
We spend a lot of time running around. She's not complaining about that.
All right. All
we
right.
travel an awful lot. We're here in Austin 6 months of the year.
Well, that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I got two quick points. Regarding education, your last caller, people get out of school with, say, an engineering degree or a research degree of some sort, and they find they're working 60 hours for the salary that they thought was high. And when they look at the number of hours that they're spending, they're actually not making as much money on an hourly basis as they thought. And number two, wages have been stagnant since 1980. People's wages, if anything, they've lost ground. And so cars are considerably more expensive. I'm looking at my Wii Energy bill, and that's gone up sky high. Everything's going up, the cost of food,
right.
Laundry soap, everything's going up, but wages are not. You need 2 and 3 jobs just to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me comment on some of those things. First of all, the fact, while the average wage, in terms of how the federal government calculates inflation, the average hasn't gone up. Even using the federal government's calculation of inflation, the wage of people in the top 25% has gone up, and those in the top 5% has gone up substantially, the per-hour wage. So, again, the very high-skilled, high-educated people, they're doing a heck of a lot better after inflation. The second question, though, is do we measure inflation properly at the federal level? Most economists would agree that the federal statistics overstate inflation by 0.5% to 1% per year. And if you do it right, therefore, you find the average person is better off. But look, we don't feel better off. The American national pastime is complaining. We like to complain, and no matter, even the rich people who are doing better, they're complaining about how tough it is to find servants and how much their yachts cost this year.
Yeah. Well, you've also had this substantial change during our lifetimes that you need 2 incomes now to run a house. That didn't used to be the case. You've got women in the workforce.
I don't believe that you need 2 incomes. I think people want 2 incomes because our eyes are bigger than our stomachs. We want more and more things. That's human nature. I think a lot of us would survive perfectly well. I think the real thing is that a lot of people, especially highly educated people, do find fulfillment in work. And it's not a hobby, but they get used to the incomes. They love the work. It's given Americans working so much, it's where we meet most of our friends. I mean, for many years at my previous job, our friends were the people who worked with us at my university and my wife's law firm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you look at middle class people, you look at school teachers or, you know, are making a 40s as an income. You'd be hard pressed to, you know, have a house and a little vacation and a couple cars if you had an income that was $40,000 a year, wouldn't you?
That's true. But let's look at those cars. How many people had 2 cars in the 50s? Okay. I mean, my parents were sort of middle to upper middle class. And they didn't get a second car, I don't think, until I started to drive in 1960 when they decided they had to have a second car so I could use it occasionally.
Yeah.
The average size of single-family dwellings in this country in the last 50 years has gone up well over 50%. So the house that the average person has to have is a heck of a lot better house than the average person had to have in the 50s and 60s.
What about
on getting that? What we take as sort of standard has gotten a heck of a lot better.
What about
college?
Yeah. What about college?
College has gone up in cost like crazy. No question about that for private schools. Public schools, in my view, are still a bargain. I think public universities, the good ones, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Texas, Berkeley, et cetera. These are the best bargains in the United States, in my view.
Thank you, Mike, so much for your call. Jessica in Minneapolis. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I was just calling in because I would consider myself, you know, a skilled worker. I have a 4-year degree, and I have a regular, I guess, 9-to-5 job, but I find myself working after 10 o'clock a lot. You know, by the time you go to the gym, make dinner, and then you have to go back to your inbox and just respond to customer emails and get back to people. It's, you know, I find myself working till midnight a lot of nights. And I don't know that it's only if you're working at a 7-Eleven or a retail store. I think there's a lot of maybe middle-level employees who are just trying to keep up with their heavy workload.
Yeah, all that darn internet, that email thing, that's changed it all, hasn't it?
It's made a difference. The question, though, why is we're so different from other countries? And that I just don't know the answer to. But other countries, people like yourself are not very likely to be working at these crazy times.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it about them? That's, to me, the crucial question. That's the question of interest.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. And let's go to Rick in Madison. Hi.
Hi, how are you? This is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
I was wondering about, I think you might have touched on this before, the corporate influence where a store needs to be open at night to stock, needs to have security. Why not put a cashier in there? And then that implements the flip-flop hours and stimulates the idea of come in late, shop 24 hours a day. And, of course, they make profit on it because they're open to restock, so they might as well make sales. I was wondering if that has been considered. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay.
I think your question is an excellent one. It goes to what the cause of this is. And what you're saying is, for some reason here, but not elsewhere, remember, we have this sort of feedback. And again, it's sort of a loop problem. What's the causation? Is it the customers? Is it the employers who realize they're open anyway? Might as well stay open and sell something, hire a cashier. You got the electricity for the lighting going, et cetera, et cetera. But again, why doesn't this happen elsewhere? They, too, have to restock. But they aren't open, and very few people are working them.
Hmm. So are we looking at, do you have numbers on this, a significant number of people who are working these weekends and overnight hours?
Oh, gosh, yes. Let me just give you some numbers.
Well, all right.
Real hard numbers. Real hard numbers. In the U.S., on a given weekend, let's see, on a given weekend, 30% of people are doing some work.
Wow.
In France, we're talking 20.
Hmm.
On a given night in the U.S., 27% are working. In France, 7%.
Woo!
And I don't want to go into what the French might be doing at night instead.
Right. They're just eating.
Yeah. All right, fine.
Yeah, they're eating. 27%, that's a large number.
Huge number of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm quite sure it's work at the margins. I mean, it's probably between 10 and 12 or like 5 to 6.
Right.
Pretty clear it is that. It's not 3 in the morning. But it's still an awful lot of people. Even the UK, which is second highest, it's less than 20%. So we really are a heck of a lot different from these other rich countries.
That's for sure. Thanks, Rick, for the call. John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
My idea, I don't know, is that they used to have blue laws for Sunday. You couldn't open anything on Sunday, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think if you went back to that, I think that would be a great idea.
Everything had to be shut down
except the emergency and really necessary things. And also that all the television and radio and maybe even the computers would be off on Sunday so that the people would be like, not bombarded with football and garbage and propaganda, and et cetera.
I didn't used to agree with you. Having done this study and others like it in the last 5 years, I agree completely that I'd like to see shops closed. I think we'd be better off. On the other hand, that requires political action, and I think we all know in this political climate the chance of anything like that happening is as close to zero as anything in life. So I'm afraid it's going to take something, some sort of grassroots push to change people's attitudes about this. And to some extent, maybe the study by illustrating some facts might do a little bit of that.
Well, what happens to employment if those things happen? What about those people who work? Are they going to be able to be absorbed during the work day?
Well, most of these people, remember, do some work during the work day. And I have no doubt that, I mean, the loss of purchasing power, if we did this, would be quite small, and it would spill over to doing more work during the rest of the more attractive times. I think there'd be some cut in hours work. I think, sadly, there might be some very small loss of jobs initially. I doubt in the end.
Hmm.
I just don't know how big that would be, but my guess is it'd be quite, quite small.
Yeah. Cindy in Appleton, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Cindy.
Well, my philosophy is that it boils down to respect, or I guess the lack of respect for ourselves. And the examples I'm going to use are: we have a high alcohol rate in this nation, we have high suicide rate in this nation, we have high gun violence in this nation, we have no respect for our environment, we have all these road rate issues. It's just one thing after another, and I think it just boils all down to the respect for yourself and your fellow man.
Well, that's a very broad-ranging comment. I tend to agree with a lot of it. I think here the issue is, though, in the end, what do we want from our lives? What makes us happy? And I can't believe that working more and more and producing ever higher incomes is what most people want. I just think somehow we've gotten on a wrong track in this regard. And it's not a question of one party or one politician or the other. It's all of us.
Right.
It's like Pogo. I don't know if people remember the Pogo comic.
Yeah.
Wonderful line in Pogo: we have met the enemy and he is us.
Right. I don't think many of us stop to think about what makes us happy.
That's unfortunate, because we should.
Right. Thank you, Cindy, very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls. Our lines have been pretty darn crowded, but you could get through right now. We're talking this hour with Professor Daniel Hammermisch. He's a professor of economics at the Royal Holloway University of London and has just released a paper, Long Work Weeks and Strange Hours. And it looks at American work weeks when compared to other rich countries, and also looks at the fact that Americans are more likely to work at night and on weekends. Why is that? That's the case here. And these are not, you know, upper-level jobs that pay a whole lot of money. These are low-skill, low-wage positions. So what's that all about? What's it all about? We welcome your phone calls. Did I give you the number? I do it so often, I forget. It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls for our guest this hour as we talk about American work weeks being long, filled with weekend work and nighttime work, and that 27%, that's a huge percent of the population, fits into those hours in some way or another. And when you compare us with other rich countries, we're just by ourselves. And so what is the reason for that? What do you think is the reason for that? 800-486-8655. Professor Hammermisch, will this study prompt a study that will look more at the cultural reasons that thus is the case, or where do you go from here with this?
Well, I don't know. I do research on things that sort of grab my attention. Whether I'll do any more on this, I don't know. I like to think more people will think about it. Again, I mean, as an academic, my job is to cook up crazy things and see things that others might not yet have seen, maybe they have, and hopefully get people to think about it. But hopefully also other academics, be they sociologists, economists, or whoever.
Jim in Rice Lake. Hi.
Yes, I'd like to contribute. Your guest speaker, you're saying, like, he wonders what's the difference between other affluent nations such as Europe and ours. I've lived in Europe and I've lived in the United States. The difference is the destruction of the American Union movement. the powers that be in this country, to quote President Obama, like ISIS, they want to degrade and destroy American unions, and they have done so. And people who work long hours and nights and crazy lives have no leverage to negotiate with the powers that be. And that's been a sad destruction of our country for the past 30 to 40 years. Thank you.
I agree half. The unions have diminished here in influence, in fact, to a very large extent. We don't have unions in the private sector. The thing is, in Britain, which is still much below us in these things, unions have also diminished in number, in coverage, and in influence. So there's got to be something else going on here. I think it's very hard to get at the political change. Unions may have something to do with it. I think it's an awful lot more than that,
though. Yeah. Well, when you think about what it might be, what goes through your mind?
I think it's partly, and I don't mean to sound like an ultra-lefty on this, since I view myself as a middle-of-the-roader, it's the fact that with the rising inequality and the increasing importance of money coming from wealthy people who want to have others working to keep their incomes up, mm-hmm. I think it's the rising inequality and the influence of decisions by the government to allow money to have an even bigger effect in political decision-making than it used to.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a partisan political persuasion, necessarily. I mean, it's kind of factual.
Maybe not in Wisconsin, ma'am, but in Texas, I can assure you this would be anathema.
Really?
Oh, gosh, yes. The worst curse you can tell somebody in Texas is you're a liberal. The L word is really a very nasty thing to say here.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim, very much for your call. Antonio in Madison, hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good. Great program, and I'm curious as there's movements afoot now that I think are wondering that are addressing that. Let me approach it from an architect's point of view over the last 20 years or so. Let's take Chicago for an example, where people really believed their dream was to have that home out in the suburbs. And they would work endless hours, and then on top of that, drive, 3 hours one way or 2.5 hours back the other way, and get there at night just to basically get ready to go to sleep and start it all over again. And this sort of rat racing thing is starting to take hold that people are realizing that they're not really happier. So there's a movement now called the minimalists, and the minimalist people really say, what can I minimally do that gives me happiness? And they're finding that, the idea of less is more is becoming very attractive, particularly to the younger generation, and I would say the 30-year-old or so. They see it. I mean, they see the whole problem with, wow, just do the simple math. I want a house. Do the mortgage. See what you're making and realize how you're just going to be working for that house and really minus a lot of things you want, like the day-to-day enjoyments, going out and have a beer with your friends, et cetera. That's all going to fall off the cart as you start chasing that dream, i.e. that expense. And then add on the hours that you are working to achieve that. I really believe there is a movement in Madison particularly. There's a lot of people that are biking more and trying to do a lot more with less. Mm. And I'm curious to know, want your opinion, if you think that's actually taking place or you've maybe been a little aware of that and maybe that hasn't statistically shown itself yet.
I like to think it's taking place. I mean, you've cited one anecdote about it. I'm sure there are many, many others. The question is, when will we start to see that in data describing the entire country? And so far, we certainly are not. I hope you're right. I'd like to see more of it. I'd like to come back and do this study 20 years from now if I were still alive and see things being somewhat different. I hope that happens.
Thank you, Antonio, very much for your call. Do you find that you're a happier person when you're living in London than when you're living in Texas?
I am, for a very strange reason. When we live in Europe, we don't have a car.
Oh.
We take public transportation.
Uh-huh.
And that forces us to do things more slowly and not to race around. I mean, having spent 20 years in Michigan as I did, I don't want to knock the car industry. And another 20 years in Texas where you produce oil, I don't want to knock it. But having that darn car and having drive everywhere and worrying about it changes my life more than anything else.
Hmm.
So the answer is yes, for this very unique reason.
Oh, that's an interesting answer. Autumn in St. Paul. Hi.
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 Sorry. I think that I live the nightlife kind of in St. Paul and Minneapolis area, and I have a lot of people, it seems, they're, you know, going after the American dream. So they're working these 10, 12-hour shifts. And many people, I think, are willing to work these late days because of our city production. It's making it a utility almost. So we're using it to our advantage as well as people being willing to work those hours.
Did you say, I'm sorry, did you say that you work those hours?
Yes, I work most weekends and night shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So my vacation is when everyone's gone and away.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are, you know, because of rush hour reasons, they wait until after, you know, the city bustle to go out because there's less things going on, less people on the road, and it's more comfortable, I guess.
Uh-huh.
When did this become the American dream, though? We didn't used to behave this way. What caused things to change? And now it's not that commuting time has gone up. If you look at the census data, commute time really has not changed on average in the last 30 years. It just hasn't increased. So it's not the desire to avoid rush hour traffic. Maybe it's the infrastructure just is more unpleasant sitting there, even if you're not sitting there any longer. I don't know. But something has caused a change. But I don't believe that the American dream is to work at strange times and to work longer and longer hours. I hope people want more out of life than more dollars.
Mm, interesting. Thank you, Autumn, very much for your call. Sue in La Crosse. Hi.
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 Thanks for the program. I have a question that I don't think has been hit upon in trying to figure this out, but I guess our healthcare system is so different from these other countries, the medical and the healthcare, and I work for a fairly minimal wage in healthcare and the hands-on level, and I'm just wondering if this would play a part in the way our country has gone. I mean, I know raising a family of six children, less is more, and you get more physical activity and more nature and that if you're not at work all the time, you know. So I just wondered what your guests thought about that.
It's a great question, but even there, no question our medical system is different from those in other countries. But look, our medical system until 2 years ago when we started with the Affordable Care Act really hadn't changed that much in 30 or 40 years. Neither had the British, which has had national health since after World War II, or the German, which really hasn't changed that much. And yet those countries had this huge drop in hours, do much less night and weekend work, and we haven't cut hours, and we're doing more night and weekend work by a lot than they are. So I don't think, as much as the medical issue is important in this country, much the most important thing going on now, it can't explain the unusual behavior of the U.S. or of U.S. workers in terms of length and timing of work. Something else is doing it. I think it's some sort of difficult to put your finger on culture.
I'm going to put you on, Betsy, but we only have about 25 seconds. I think you can do it.
Yes. My comment is that in many European countries, the impetus to work longer and harder is not as strong as it is in the U.S. because they have 1 to 2 years of maternity care. They have universal mm-hmm. elderly care. They have much less expensive medical coverage. Expenses coming from the consumer.
Mm-hmm. All right. On that note, we have to end the entire program. Thank you for your thoughts on this. Professor Hammermisch, thank you so much for being with us. Interesting conversation.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Our guest this hour, Professor Dan Hammermisch, and you can go to our Facebook page and find more about the paper that he did, Americans Looking at, Much More Likely to Work Nights and Weekends. Why is that? We have yet to really find out. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing the program, and thanks to Scott Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Great conversations ahead. We'll be with you again tomorrow from 1 until 3.